Good evening, everyone. Legislators, please have a seat. And the public, it is the Tompkins County 2017 budget forum for the 2017 budget. I will tell you what I would like to happen here. The first thing will be the county administrator, Joe Mariano, will do his PowerPoint up on the screens. That it's the same one that we saw at the beginning of the budget process way back in September 1st. I will invite people to come to the microphones to make comments, and I would hope that you keep in mind that you can your comments should maybe stay in the 3-minute range, and or questions that you may have. If there are five people here to talk about the same item, you might want to negotiate with each other to see who's going to speak for you, if that works for you. If not, we'll listen to all of you. I would have said we're here to do our budget thing again. I think I heard it on TV last night, but I will just say welcome to the forum of 2017. And Joe Mariano, do your thing.
Thanks, Jim, and welcome, everybody. I hope this isn't your punishment for attending the budget forum that you have to sit through a PowerPoint presentation. I'll try to make this as breezy as a budget presentation can be. There are some numbers and facts and figures on here. I'll go as quickly as is appropriate for this. And if ever you want to slow me down and we'll go into some details, we can certainly do that. But as we always do, every year when we start the budget process, we begin with a set of assumptions and kind of taking the temperature of the environment. And often I go through that first, but people are really wanting to hear what the bottom line is before we start. Those who are involved at the library know that many people like to go to the last chapter of the book first to see what the ending is. So just to kind of get to that bottom line, this is a low-growth budget. Spending is up in this budget by less than 1%. That's really good. That's about on track with inflation. It does require a 3% increase in the tax levy, and that's for three reasons, really. 1.5% is needed to offset the loss of sales taxes. 0.5 point by policy we raise to invest in capital and infrastructure. And a 1% increase is needed for everything else in this $170 million budget. Importantly, our tax rate is down by 1.5%. That's the third straight decrease in our tax rate. It's the lowest since 2011, our property tax rate. The budget tries to align our resources with our priorities. And you can see what those are there, including adaptation to climate change, compliance, recruitment and retention, and ATIs, alternatives to incarceration and reentry. The factors affecting the budget, certainly the economy affects the county budget, and so we watch the economy, and it's doing pretty well. If you look at our unemployment rate in Tompkins County, you can see what the trend has been since the recession in 2008, and you can see that the numbers went way up, and they've come down slowly but nicely. We're now at an unemployment rate that's lower than what it was before the recession. Inflation is low. That's our friend. We don't have to worry too much about commodity prices going up because inflation continues to track at below 1%. Consumer confidence, which we always watch, because when people are feeling good about the economy and their future, they tend to spend their money, and that usually affects sales tax. It's strong, but it's wavering a bit right now. You can see in that chart. Stock market continues to be at a record pace, very high. And that usually bodes well for our budget as well because people who have their investments making nice returns feel good. They're also spending money. But now comes the anomaly in this matrix of good news, and that is consumer spending is down, and that's our sales tax. There's been an appreciable decline in consumer spending that's occurred over the last 2 years. If you look at mid-year spending, January through June, over the past couple of years, right now spending is down by nearly 4% from where it was 2 years ago. And that's what that graph shows. Steady increase over time and then an almost inexplicable drop over the last couple of years in sales tax revenues. And we'll talk more about that in a second because it has a a profound effect on the county budget. There are also need factors that we look at when we start to put the budget together. We look at trends of things like food stamps. We've always said that food stamps are a really good barometer of underlying need in the community. This is the trend that we've seen, again, since the recession back in 2008. These are food stamps now called SNAP. You can see that they peaked long after the depths of the recession, but they've been declining fairly steadily since, let's say, 2014. Family assistance is one of our temporary assistance programs. That's down. That's a good trend. People are getting off of public assistance and finding their way into the economy, at least some of them, because the other temporary assistance program is called Safety Net. This includes single individuals, but also people who have been on public assistance for more than 5 years. They have to get off the program you just saw and come on to this one. These cases remain well above recession levels. That's not a good sign. It means the economy is leaving many people behind. There have been recent increases in caseload in spite of that good economy that we've been watching. And this is important to us because the county pays 71 cents of every dollar for benefits provided through this program. When we begin the process, we not only look at what our environment is, we try to consider what our goals are going to be for the upcoming year. And they're pretty simple. We want to maintain current levels of service. We think we've got it right. We went through a bad period. We've done a little bit of rebuilding, but we think we're at a pretty good place with respect to services, and we want to keep them there. We want to sustain our investment in facilities and infrastructure, something the rest of the country has not done a great job at. We want to maintain our fiscal strength and resiliency because the economy does go up and down, and we want to be prepared not only when times are good, but when times aren't so good. We want to address evolving priorities like the ones I talked about when we began. We want to be able to adapt to climate change, achieve compliance, become better at alternatives to incarceration and reentry. We also have an aging workforce, so we want to get better at recruitment and retention of our employees. There's some big drivers in this budget. I'll go through a few of them here. The sales tax, labor costs, mandates, capital investments, agency funding. Those aren't unfamiliar, but the weird one is the sales tax. Usually this is a good news story. We talk about how much more sales tax we will realize in the next year than the current year. Not this time. We've experienced declines in sales tax collections in 5 of the past 6 quarters. That's the worst performance in 20 years. I've been looking at numbers for a very long time. I've never seen this kind of performance in sales tax, even during some pretty dismal recessions. We're projecting in this budget a drop of 1.5% in 2016. We hope for better, but we're projecting a minus 1.5 and recovering most of that decline next year. So basically staying flat compared to where we were in 2015. So no growth over 2 years, basically. A quick chart here to show the importance of that anomaly. Sales tax in any normal year grows by 3.4%. It can be a little bumpy, but on average it goes by 3.4%. So if it did, this is what we would have seen our revenues look like between 2014 and 2017. You see how those go up. That's not what we saw. This is what we're looking at. So the red line shows the declines that we've either experienced or we project. And so you can see that the gap between those two numbers is $4.3 million. So if things had just been ordinary, the county would have had an additional $4.3 million to work with, and that's been erased by what's happening with the sales tax. That's put tremendous pressure on the property tax. The decline budget to budget, as I said in that first slide, is the equivalent of a 1.5% increase in property tax. It is a shift of burden from the sales tax base to the property tax base. Some more traditional things that are going on, labor costs. We have contracts, thankfully, that are settled through 2017. They're fair and reasonable. They're all settled at 2.25% through 20. All the settled contracts are 2.25% through 2017, and it's only the uniformed unions that are out of contract beginning in 2017. The labor costs have been affected by the fact that we have lifted our roster slightly over the past year. We're up by a little less than 11 positions. Most of those positions have been created this year, and they're self-funded. There's either grant money behind it or earned income behind it. So there's only 1.7 of the new FTEs that are brand new to the 2017 budget. Our history of FTEs, you can see where we were. We peaked at 776. Our bottom was about 720. We're now at 731, but our roster is down by 6% since it peaked back in 2009. Our fringe costs are up slightly. That's really important because fringes can be very expensive. Our health costs are actually down. That's the result of a number of things, new health plans, and the consortium that we joined and helped form several years ago is working its magic. It's holding our costs down. Our pension rates are, years ago I would have said that's an unreasonable 15%, but it's actually a reduced pension rate from the year before at 15.3%. So overall, our salary and fringes are up by only 1.3%. That's pretty good in an economy like this. Mandates, which are always the challenge of counties in New York State. I never thought I'd hear myself say this, but this is the second consecutive year where our mandated expenses have actually gone down a bit. They're down by $144,000. Some went up, some went down. If you really want to look at these on your sheets, you can. But, again, the net effect is mandates overall are down by a little bit. That masks the fact that Medicaid, and that's what this chart is, even though it has stabilized over the past few years, in fact, down a little bit, is still almost a $12 million expense in this budget. It's 25% of your property tax levy, still goes to pay this single expense that really should be a state cost, very much a part of our budget. We had a couple of interesting things this year that are fairly unique. It didn't snow last year. So the amount that we owe towns for snow plowing, we contract with them to do some of our plowing, actually is going to be going down in 2017. That helped us. We repurposed some of that savings and put it back into highway materials, which will help us mitigate the tax effect when it snows again and those contracts go up. Plus, it gets put into improved highways. Our capital reinvestment by policy, every year we raise our property tax levy by 0.5%, and we invest it in brick and mortar. This year is an interesting new capital program. In fact, we took all of the proceeds of this 0.5% increase and we invested it in a new natural infrastructure program, which deals with things in the natural environment, stream bank protection, wetland improvements, things like that, that will help us deal with severe weather events in the future. This is for the nerds. This shows how our tax levy will go up with that 0.5 point and where our projected expenses will be over the next 10 or so years. Some of you are here for one of our sponsored partners, but with respect to our partner agencies and sponsored agencies, the community college didn't ask for more money. They were flat. TCAT didn't ask for money, so our allocation to them is flat. There is a bit of a shift in support for TCAD, which is the Economic Development Agency, by agreement shifting money from the room tax, from the property tax to the room tax, to help pay for that Economic Development Agency. And all the other agencies received an across-the-board 2% increase. But beyond that, we also provided nearly $200,000 in what we call one-time OTRs, money out of the bank, non-recurring investments in our agencies, some of which have gone to things that people are here tonight to talk about, I think. Our contingency account's up a little bit. That helps us mitigate some of the risks that we're dealing with right now. No budget is perfect. We've put extra money in our contingency account to deal with some of the risks that we can anticipate around the corner. We also have things called enterprise funds. They are self-sustaining governmental businesses. We have two of them. One's the airport. We're in the third year of a three-year plan where the county has stepped away from a charge that we levy on the airport for our administrative services. We're trying to help them out a bit during a downtime. It saves the airport $126,000. In solid waste, that's the other business enterprise. A real adaptation to lowered commodity prices for recycled goods. They've made that transition very nicely and been able to hold the annual fee to $55. With respect to over-target requests, these are items that couldn't fit within the target budgets of our departments and agencies. Some of the larger ones that have been funded in the budget that I recommended, there are not many of them. We did provide additional funding to the personnel department to help them with the function of recruitment and retention. This is really for a position in that budget to help them do more of that. Our weights and measures department, we often kid about it. This actually is a 50% increase in the roster of the entire department. It's a one-person department with no backup at all. So this budget proposes a halftime person for backup and depth in that operation. I said before that we've repurposed about $125,000 in savings in snow plowing contracts. And now we get into some of the one-time, non-recurring funded OTRs in this the recommended budget. We're investing in some major highway equipment because we need to. It's time to replace some very large and very expensive pieces of equipment on highway. They have money in there, but the highway reserves that they can use to pay for that. There's a fair amount of small conventional equipment in the sheriff's office, supported with one-time OTRs, nothing fancy, things like desks and vests and radar and things like that. Some technology in the assessment office and in our clerk's office to scan our records. Whoops, I skipped by one, but we'll pick it up later. Some additional support for TCAT, which is really a recurring. Last year we gave them what we call one-time money. If we're going to do it again, we have to, again, appropriate one-time money, which we've done to TCAT just to keep them even. One thing that I've requested for in my budget is a new performance measurement system, a countywide system that's been piloted in the youth services operation and to great effect. I think this kind of rounds the corner on the one-time OTRs. Several things in the libraries. $30,000 for public use computers. We bought last year chairs, this year chairs for the Borg-Warren room, next year it's tables. And then the rural libraries, we provided some support for e-content services. And these are all funded OTRs. So the outcomes of all this, we said our goal was to maintain services. We have. We have not reduced any services in this budget. We said we want to invest in brick and mortar, and we did. We fully fund the projects that are on our capital improvement plan, and we do have this important new initiative, the Natural Infrastructure Program, that will help us deal with the effects of climate change. We said we wanted to adapt to evolving priorities. We sustain a very robust alternatives to incarceration portfolio, and in the Department of Social Services, there's additional support for housing, for jail evaluations, and for family treatment court. We also, and this again is for the nerds, this compliance is a buzzword these days. Those of you in government know that very close enforcement of regulations and policies, and it does incorporate a number of compliance management initiatives that we started in 2016. We said we wanted to increase our commitment to diversity recruitment, employee recognition, and so forth, and this budget does provide funds to do that. And then, again, the Natural Infrastructure Initiative. We said our goal was to stay within a 3% levy limit, and this budget is exactly at 3%. The property tax levy, the amount of money we raise for property taxes, is up by exactly 3%. That's a bit higher than the tax cap, which is currently projected at a little less than 2.25%. There are risks in this budget. The number one is sales tax. There is no trend that allows us to safely predict what the sales tax will be next year. So there's a risk in that number. There's a risk that we will lose our variance at the jail, and that might drive jail costs, board out costs, to be able to provide, for board out costs. The assigned counsel program, there are new income thresholds. You can make more money beginning in April and still qualify for free legal defense counsel under new rules, and that's a risk. We put more money in the budget, but it may not be enough. And so just to bring all this to close with some numbers, the recommended levy growth in this budget is 3%. That means that we'll be raising an additional $1.4 million beyond what we levy in 2016. The total budget is $173 million. That's up by just 0.8%. That's almost exactly the rate of inflation right now. The local budget, the amount of that larger budget that we raise with our own dollars, basically property and sales tax dollars, is up a little bit more. It's up by 0.9%, but still below 1%. The tax levy, again, is a 3. The tax rate, this is really what you need to look at. When you look at your assessed value, you need to look at the tax rate and see what your bill is going to be. It's down. It's down by 1.5%. And if you're an average taxpayer, your assessment may have gone up for 2017, more than it was in 2016. So when we account for that and look at tax rate, an average person who owns a median valued home would see a $16 increase next year if this budget passed, and that's a 1.4% increase. So the next steps here, amendments will be made. I'm sure I've given the legislature a good budget, but not perfect. So I'm sure there'll be amendments made by the expanded budget committee. They will adopt, the legislature will adopt the revised or tentative budget that will replace the one that I gave them. There'll be a public hearing on that tentative budget, and then they will adopt that final budget and capital program. That will happen sometime in mid-November. So that's the sum and substance. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. The way I would like to proceed, I did not ask for blue cards to be signed. If people want to address us, we'll just start down the row and tell me your name and where you live.
We've got a list here.
We have a list there?
Have a list.
Okay.
And if people were speaking, could go to the microphones here at the end of the table. And that way you're going to be able to address all of the
Marcia, you want to tell me the first name on the list?
First name is Nina Schultz.
So, there you go.
While she's coming up, can
Excuse
I just
me,
ask,
you have, what?
Ask a question?
Yes.
So since we don't have a lot of people in the room, can we be more flexible on the three-minute guideline you recommended?
Well, let me see how that goes.
And also, okay. if the guideline you mentioned about having one person speak for an issue, if...
That was a suggestion. They don't have to follow it.
Okay. Well, anybody who feels like they're not getting enough of a voice after this meeting is over...
As I said, it was a suggestion. You don't have to follow it. Go ahead. Nina.
Good evening. My name is Nina Schultz.
Nina.
I am the...
Sorry.
You're very... No problem. No worries. I am the president of the Friends of the Tompkins County Public Library, and I am here to speak very briefly in support of the Friends... of the library's budget request. As I think you all know, the Friends do have a passionate belief in the mission of the Tompkins County Public Library, including enhancing the lives of all people in Tompkins County through free and open access to information. We thank the county for its continued and ongoing support of the library. We all know, though, that navigating technology and information in today's environment is an extremely complex task. And to maintain its service and its mission to the county and the people of the county, the library has to be able to mediate that experience and make that experience available to all the people of the county through professional expertise. We encourage the county, we hope the county will grant the library's request for an increase for a line on the technology librarian who will support the planned 21st Century Lab in the space recently vacated by Finger Lakes Library System. This is where an important information environment for the people of Tompkins County. I would ask you all to think about your experiences with information and learning and technology over the last several years. Have you done it all on your own? Have you had the benefit of expertise? The people of Tompkins County need that expertise. The library has also seen significant increases in the last few years in usage through programming attendance, usage of facilities, usage of collections. Support for and in staffing is needed. We're so pleased that the county has ended the longstanding structural deficit. It's now the time to start restoring the 15% FTE that the library lost in the recession. So with that, again, I thank you for your consideration and for your ongoing support of the library and the Friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina. Next will be Sarah O'Shea. And following that is Linda, and I'm B, it looks like B-A-R-T something. Who would that be? Okay. Then you can be ready to go when she is. Go ahead. Thank you. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi, my name is Sarah O'Shea, and I am the head of the Youth Services Department at the Tompkins County Public Library. And I came tonight to read a written statement that one of our teen library users had written in support of the Tompkins County Public Library. The teen user's name is Aurora Golden Appleton, and she writes, "While I am unable to be here in person, I wanted to take a moment to express my support of the Tompkins County Public Library. Last week marked the beginning of my third year as a member of the Junior Library Advisory Council. As a member of JLAC, I work with other young Ithacans to coordinate library programs for adolescents and to advocate for increased fiscal support of our library. As a homeschooled student, I have come to rely on the library for literary supplementation to my curriculum. As a teenager, I know firsthand the degree to which my generation relies on technology, and I'm so grateful that our library has been active in advocating for increased technology resources. And finally, as an Ithacan, I see the world of good our library does for our community through outreach to new parents, programming for individuals with sensory processing disabilities, and the simple gift of offering a safe place for children and families to develop a love of books." Thank you.
Thank you for the reading the note also. Linda.
Yes, I'm winging it. My name is Linda Bartnick.
We do that most of the time here. But
yeah, well, I'll try to keep it under 20 minutes.
Okay. All right.
I've only been in Ithaca for 2 years. As you can probably tell from, I have a southern accent. So I moved here 2 years ago as a retired university librarian. And, of course, I went first to the public library to find a home for volunteer work, for some sort of connection with the rest of the community and whatnot. All of you guys know that kind of experience. I bet everybody sitting around this table uses a library some way. I think what I want to address personally is that when I retired from my position at a university, I had three mission-centered labs like she is trying to create across the street. You can't do this without the appropriate personnel. She can't go down the hall and say, "Hey, Yvette, why don't you run the lab for us?" You have got to grant this kind of special funding for personnel. I don't think even the library here has a real understanding of what's going to happen when they develop this lab. They're going to be serving small business, educational groups, clubs, senior citizens. Everyone is going to take a bite of this apple. She's going to ask you for a penny. She needs a dollar. Give her the penny so she can do this job and do it right. Thanks.
Great job. Welcome to Tompkins County. Patrice Locker Anthony. And you can correct my pronunciation if when you get to the mic.
You said it right. Good evening.
Good evening.
I wrote mine down because I have a habit of getting all passionate and going way longer than I should. I timed it, too. I want to first thank you ahead of time for even considering this. I know how cash-strapped our governments are, and I know how much work is put into this process of creating something that will work for everybody. So thank you ahead of time in case I miff you a bit when I say the rest. My name is Patrice Lockett Anthony. I am, among other things, a small business owner, a community advocate, president of Green Star's board of directors, and a writer. I am also a lover of libraries. Libraries are, for me, sacred space. My mother was a divorced mother of four who left high school to marry and have children. When she left my dad, her kids were between ages 4 and 10 years. She obtained her GED. She worked full-time for IBM as a key punch operator. And she raised us, starting in a one-bedroom apartment for all five of us and no social service assistance. She told me years later that it just hadn't occurred to her to go and apply. She worked. Libraries were our playground when she ran errands, after school, and on weekends. Why? Because that's where she studied. She then went to Pepperdine for her bachelor's degree in psych. She did her studying at the library. She received a Ford Fellowship for graduate studies at Claremont McKenna, where she received her PhD in education. She studied at the library. All of her children attended college. All of her children grew up appreciating and respecting the value of libraries. Engaging actively in our country's politics, policies, and communities should be de rigueur and absent class separatism. This is only possible through public schools and public libraries. Our public library is top-notch and deserves whatever support we can provide, including financial. Our public library system is now and should remain the great equalizer. It provides ready access to books, journals, reference materials, and technology. That access, though, is not enough. It must also provide access to the professionals who serve the public walking through its doors. Please help provide for that access. We are at our best as a city, county, and nation when we get real about what is necessary to have an informed and participatory citizenry. If you believe we are at our best when all voices are at the table, then fund the place that makes that possible regardless of class, race, gender, or any of the other excuses used to exclude. Please fund the library. Thank you.
Thank you. That's an incredibly compelling story. Suki Tabor, and she's here to talk to us about the Youth Bureau.
So I was here when Amy Hendricks did her presentation and talked about the over-target request for the outings program. And I came tonight to help clarify some of the questions folks had around the outing program and the Pathfinders component. So the outing program has several components that focus on activities in the outdoors that challenge young people to work together, develop healthy leisure interests, and stretch themselves beyond perceived boundaries. Outings offers recreational opportunities to rock climb, canoe, bike, and tree climb. They also offer a year-round outdoor explorers group. They provide bike rodeos and also Pathfinders. Pathfinders is a newer component of the outing program that has proven very successful over the last year and a half. Pathfinders first began out of a federal Safe Routes to School grant awarded to the city of Ithaca. It currently serves students from BJM and Fall Creek Elementary Schools. Students from these schools are brought together through a five-week series of activities. Participation has steadily increased, and we look forward to expanding this pilot program to all of the elementary schools in the Ithaca City School District. This program is modeled after our very successful Urban-Rural Adventure program, which had similar goals. Urban-Rural Adventure was established at a time when the climate in the middle schools and high schools was filled with tension between different groups, primarily urban and rural youth. Principals and students from DeWitt and Boynton Middle School noticed a significant difference in how young people that participated in the urban-rural program acted toward their peers compared with students who had not. Interactions were much more positive and students were friendlier. Some of the things that parents and participants have said about their participation in these programs are, it was a great way to build friendships with classmates and to meet new people. She has already seen her new friend in town. It's been a great community-building opportunity for her. I made a lot of friends, and my confidence went up. I like that he is doing something that is cooperative and thought-provoking, and I became a lot closer to people and cooperated better. Our goal with the Pathfinders program is to bring fourth and fifth graders together from rural and urban areas to meet new people, develop leadership skills, and promote health and wellness. This is achieved through a series of biking and outdoor team building activities designed to build trust quickly. Numerous studies have suggested that bringing youth outdoors away from screens significantly increases their social engagement and peer-to-peer interactions. Being in nature has been shown to enhance social behavior and learning, alleviate stress, and promote optimal psychological and physical health. Pathfinders is giving young people a rare opportunity to interact outdoors with peers, engaging in activities that build leadership skills, promote healthy lifestyle choices, and push young people outside their comfort zones. Full funding of Pathfinders will allow us to do 12 to 14 groups during the school year, which translates into us being able to serve 150 to 200 youth. Without the $10,000 over-target request, we would be reducing the number of groups by half, thereby reducing the number of youth served down to 75 or 100 youth. Given our previous success and positive feedback, we feel confident that saying that the Pathfinders program is a bridge for urban and rural youth to come together, building leadership, communication, and social skills useful for navigating middle school while building friendships and promoting health and wellness. Thank you very much for your consideration of this.
Thank you. Sue Dale Hall, who needs no introduction, talking about, of all things, child care.
Are you sure?
Maybe I can surprise you. No, I'm going to talk about child care. Hi, I'm Sue Dale Hall. I live in the town of Ithaca, and I'm the director of the Child Development Council. And I just wanted to speak briefly with you this evening about something a little bit different, another angle on child care, and that is the supply of child care. As you all know, child care is sort of the gateway to jobs. So I was quite interested to see the family assistance numbers going down, but safety net numbers not quite at the same pace. And I think one of the concerns that we have in our community that we don't talk about enough is that we're losing child care providers. So there's roughly 6,300 children under the age of 10 in households where all the parents there present are working. We have enough space for a little bit less than half of those children. So the question is, where are the rest of them? And what's happening for the supply right now? Each year we see it chip away just a little bit more. Our child care centers are fairly stable. Our family child care homes and our group family child care homes, we lose a few every year. We may gain one, we lose two, something like that, roughly. So that's been pretty consistent over the last decade. We've been seeing it go down. There's been an increase in the last decade in regulations. And a lot of them are physical plant regulations that child care providers can't quite address, or prospective child care providers. So someone might go through the whole application process and then find out that, oh, I need impact-resistant surface underneath my play yard, or I have to have railings in the back, or I need safety guards on the windows. There are all kinds of things that can come into play. And while we have some resources available at the Child Development Council to help individuals, we don't have enough to help make them transition to become full-fledged registered providers. So it's a gap, and it's an area that we'd like you to consider looking at and how we could help more folks transition into that pipeline and become registered or licensed family child care providers.
Thank you, Sue. Next, I have Gina Verricchio, and she is from Ithaca, and she'll be talking about TCPL.
It's Gina Verricchio, but you were darn close. And I have to admit to being a little ill-prepared. I have spent the last couple of days sick. I was just mentioning to the library contingent over there that this was about the only thing that was going to get me out of my pajamas this evening, was to be sure to come down here and offer my 2 cents, which might be more like 1.5, about the Tompkins County Public Library. So my notes are sparse, and I'll try and be targeted. A lot of what I felt needed to be said has already been said tonight, so I will not reiterate the exact same things to you again and again. The couple pieces that I would love to just lift up from what I've already heard are the multifaceted services that the library offers in this community. It is one of the only institutions, possibly the only institution, that serves people from birth to death in this community, that serves people of all religious faiths, of academic backgrounds, various economic what have yous. As I said, bear with
That's
me
good.
Tonight.
Socioeconomic.
You're getting me at 64%. So in a town that values education as much as we do, most city school budgets are passed. We have two hills occupied by large educational institutions that serve a very specific demographic, and there is a lot of space around all of that and a lot of people around all of that. And really the main institution that serves them is the Tompkins County Public Library. I count myself lucky to be in that crew that is serviced by the Tompkins County Public Library. Something that stood out to me in the presentation earlier was that last year the chairs needed to be replaced in the Borg Warner room, and the tables this year, I heard, and just envisioning exactly how many butts in those seats over the years it took to wear them out, and pencils scratching on those tables that required their replacements. I haven't done the math for that calculation, but I'd love to see that in the next slideshow for sure, but it's got to be a lot. I would also say that that the library serves a lot of secret purposes that aren't educational specific. I won't point over that way to a certain someone that came with me today, who, as he ages over the years, this is one shared interest that constantly brings us together, whether it is programs that the library is hosting, the volunteer work that we both do there, opportunities to come tell the legislator how cool we think the library is. The library is a commonality that brings us together as a family, which I think of as sort of demonstrative in the same way that it brings us together as a community. It is a rare county where you would find, you know, 60% of the audience for a budget hearing all here to tell you about how important it is that when the library asks for money, you give it. So you should. The end.
Thank you. A couple things, Gina. Number one, I hope you're feeling better. And number two, you did a great job winging it. So,
thanks. And I'll wipe the microphone.
That's all right. All right.
I was just going to say, if that's 64%, can you come back at 100%?
Yeah.
You know, it's a little daunting. Really long legislature meetings, please.
Good job. And the next person I have is Drew Verrickiel.
Hi.
Go for it, man.
Drew, I'm a library volunteer. I don't really have any idea what to say, but I don't know. I'm homeschooled, so I don't go to school, but I do go to the library.
Can I give you a couple of points you might want to run by? Why are you a library volunteer? And what does it mean to you to be able to be a library volunteer?
Well, I really like the library because I just hate buying books because I read them real fast and then have nothing to do with them. So I like checking out books and listening to audiobooks and CDs and stuff like that. And working at the library first off gives me like a first choice of everything, which is pretty cool. And then I get to know all its secrets, and then I see a whole bunch of friends there. Yeah, I don't know. The library is pretty great, so I'd give it a lot of money.
All right. That does it. Okay, we'll vote as soon as you leave, you know. The next person I have is Liz Kloman. I hope I'm right. Liz is from Enfield.
Oh. You were close. It's
or Liz
Kloman.
Vance. I'm sorry.
Right? Yeah. It's a trick. I do live in the town of Enfield, but I'm also the director of the Ithaca Youth Bureau. And I'm back again this week to talk to you a little bit more about the recreation partnership. The total increase for the county to help support more than 4,000 children is $3,866. As you saw in the budget presentation, we were given a 2% increase, which is $1,305. It's so very much appreciated, but it is just not enough to keep the programming at the current level. The OTR of $2,561 will allow the Rec Partnership to maintain current programming and serve more than 4,000 youth across the county. Recreation programming was identified as a base offering in the pyramid of services that Amy presented to you last week. It is one of the most cost-effective ways to reach a large number of youth to teach them a wide array of skills that aid them in their growth and development. Tonight, I'm reminded of a gentleman named Mike McLaughlin, who was an RP representative from Newfield in the 90s. Some of you may have remembered him. We found ourselves coming to you at that point, asking for some support. And I'm reminded of Mike because he spoke about the RP as being like an insurance policy. We insure the things that we care about and that we want to keep safe, right? The RP is insurance for our young people. The programs help keep our children actively engaged. They help them stay physically fit and healthy. And they're learning skills that help them in school, that help them find jobs, and that save us, the taxpayers, money in the long run. $2,561 is a lot less than $148,767, which is what it costs to incarcerate a young person a year. $2,561 is a lot less than $13,700, which is the cost to care for one adult with diabetes, which has become an epidemic in our country. We keep people, our young people who are healthy are going to, the chances of them staying healthy as they grow older are a lot greater if you get them while they're young involved in programming, teaching them lifelong leisure skills, which is what this programming does. Providing 4,000 youth with the opportunity to be happy, healthy, and successful in their own community for $2,561 sounds like a really good deal to me and one that we shouldn't pass up. Healthy children have a better chance of growing into healthy adults. I urge you to approve the Rec Partnership OTR for $2,561. And I really appreciate your time listening again.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
Next, John Gaines from Groton.
Thank you, and I appreciate being here this evening. Good evening, everybody.
Glenn?
I now find myself as chair of the FoodNet Meals on Wheels Board of Directors. And during the course of the year, we discovered, and I'm sure many of you have heard by now, that our 30-year founding executive director, Steve Griffin, who's over here, is retiring at the end of the year. And that means that we needed to immediately get started on a search process, which we're doing. But the second part is that the board really needs to focus on the transition that will happen from Steve to the next executive director. An important part of that transition is keeping a focus on the client services. We have quite a few people in virtually every community in this county that depend on us for either the hot meal at the middle of the day 5 days a week, or the hot meal plus the sandwich meal 5 days a week, or all of that plus the frozen meal to get them through the weekend. those people feel somewhat vulnerable, and they feel that transition is not necessarily a good thing. So in order to really focus on transition, we focused on what's the key part. The key part is the staff. The board of directors can't do it. The next executive director can't do it. We need the staff to be able to go through this transition. We need to be able to retain the staff during this transition. During the current budget year, you put aside, and we're very grateful for this, $22,080, I'm sorry, to bring FoodNet staff up to living wage. That was very much appreciated, and it made a great difference with staff retention and the services being delivered. We put in an over-target request this year for a slightly larger amount than that. Originally, it was $22,543 to maintain that living wage that we can't get through our other sources. Now, we found out after that request was submitted that through some state funding to the State Office of the Aging through the local office in a direct care line, we no longer need the full $22,543, but the new request is for $10,043. And that $10,043, and I believe there's a resolution that will be introduced to that effect, will be devoted to maintaining the staff through the living wage program. So that is our specific request, and I would also invite you to put on your calendar November 17th, when we're going to do a meet and greet down the street at the Presbyterian Church late afternoon, early evening, to say goodbye to Steve. We figured we'd get that over before the holidays. He will be here through the holidays, so he may have other opportunities.
Can you repeat that date and time?
November 17th at the Presbyterian Church, probably 4:30 to 7 or something like that. Very informal meet and greet. No big dinner. Steve's request.
Thank you so much for that, Steve. You know, let me just say from the Ledge point of view that, you know, we've certainly appreciated all the hard work you have done, and obviously the community. You've made a huge difference to many, many people in the community. Thank you for this. And we'll see you at the Presbyterian Church. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to speak to the Ledge about? Please come to the microphone, sir. I need your name and where you live and what kind of car you're driving.
Thank you. Jim, I went to the State Theater, but it was closed. Remember, you were going to have the meeting here? My name is Richard Flavel. I live in Lansing, District 10. I'll give you a little personal background. I grew up in the Philadelphia area in 1954. I went to work for Firestone Tire and Rubber Company, changing tires, and made it a store manager. I managed stores in Stroudsburg and Reading and Potsdam. In 1971, I had the opportunity to come up here and open my own tire store. I was scared to death because I've been with Firestone for so long, but it worked out okay. And I had two secrets of my success. We had it for 26 years, paid our bills, paid our taxes. The one secret was I had great people working for me. You know that, Jim. You know some of them.
Yes, I do.
Great people. And the other one was I signed every check for every expense. For the rent, for the heat, for the parts. I signed them. It was me, personally. And I would like to urge the legislature to look at the budget. And when you see something, a department wants a couple million dollars, but there's a request there for $500 maybe. Ask yourself, would I write a personal check for that amount? Take it personally. I think you might get a better look at the budget that way. I know that's how I get along. I take everything personally. So, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Richard. It's always good to see you. Is there anyone else from around the room who would like to speak to the Ledge concerning the budget, the 2017 budget? Let me just say from the committee's point of view and the legislature, thank you all for coming. And let me, is there any of the legislators who want to say a word or two and bless me with not debating all the issues, okay? And let me say one other thing for the people, a couple things. We have meetings coming up. Tomorrow evening we have a meeting. It's called a voting meeting. Remember, many of you who are wanting to do things, want us to do things, have probably talked with legislators, and they are building amendments that we will be looking at this Thursday starting at 5:30, and then a week from that time, again, same time, same bat channel, right here next Thursday night. And they're called voting meetings. If a majority of the people in the room, legislators, approve it, it will go into the tentative budget, and at the end of the process, we will vote on the budget. But based on what I've heard here this evening, many of these things are probably already being put forward by some of my colleagues here. So that's how the process will work starting tomorrow and then again next week, and then as we move through the whole process and hopefully vote on the final budget middle of November, I believe. Now, Martha.
Thank you, Jim. And I want to add to Jim's thanks to the public, to all of you for taking the time and having the interest and caring so much about the agencies and the programs that you do support. This is to staff. I want to, before we start voting, there's some sort of big picture things. I hope we can maybe get a picture of first. You know, we have one-time money, we have target money, two kind of buckets. The fund balance is the big area where we look at the one-time spending. So if we can get, before we start considering actual amendments, if we can get an overview of where we are with the fund balance. I know there's some information in the book, but like some history last few years of the general fund balance and what our target is and what the delta is, that'd be great. And there are some OTRs about, the big OTRs, about overtime and in the sheriff's department and the road patrol and the jail. We've asked for some more consolidated, comprehensive information. For me, I'm going to have a hard time voting on any target funding until I see what that picture looks like.
Should have.
Kevin.
Did we get it already?
This is Kevin McGuire, and he works with the county administrator on the budget.
I was trying to get that out under one email rather than cluttering things up. We got the history of payroll together probably by this morning, and I reached out to the sheriff's department to get your other request, the history of SWAT calls over the last few years, and I'm not sure where they are with that, but I was going to try to get those together and send those out to you. We'll get them to you tomorrow. We'll get the payroll piece to you first thing in the morning, or I could send it out tonight, actually, and we'll get the SWAT one to you when it comes.
Yeah, the clutter is not as big a problem as needing time to look things over and then ask follow-up questions like before tomorrow evening. So, yeah, whatever you've got.
May I make a suggestion? I haven't looked at what the amendments are so far, but if they're small, and some of the requests that we've talked about here or heard, they're small. So I think, you know, the reason we have three voting meetings is getting information and moving it ahead. So.
Well, I did look at Kevin's list that he sent out today, and then Carol actually asked a question about why are they in that order. I'm going to guess it's just the order you received them. Which?
No, it's not. No. Kevin and I were speaking about this morning, but go ahead.
So, first the order they were received, and then tweak it to push ones that were specified for a later date to the bottom, so that only the 10-6, the ones for October 6th, were. So those are first. So that's the first. So it's order they were received, except that one went to the bottom.
Somebody asked for something to be considered later?
Right. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And then the other exception is that you all have liked in past years to consider ones that were targeted at the same amendment, I'm sorry, amendments targeted at the same OTR together. So some were elevated to join earlier submissions on the same one. I just sent an email to Carol with that answer. I'd be happy to include that in the email to the rest of you if you'd like.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes total sense. Right now, we were at 18 amendments this morning. We may have more since then, but yeah. He grouped them. If there's five for the same thing, it makes sense to put them together.
Right, but it also, it's really important before we actually start voting on anything to get the overall picture. And so it's good to have all of the proposals in and to have the background information that we're asking for.
And he will also be contacting department heads, so they may be here. They will know that we're going to be dealing with it on one of the three nights, and they will know when we're dealing. So, I'll go down the row. Carol, you're next.
Yeah, so I thank you, everybody, who came out. There were lots of other things to do on such a pleasant evening. If anybody, I'm glad everybody here got to speak. I'm still willing to stay longer if anybody feels like they had more they wanted to say. I have a couple of questions. Have we asked questions of people who spoke?
No. I'd rather not.
Okay, well, later I would like to make sure that I understand the relationship between the Pathfinders program and the Outing program. They're in the same OTR.
I think that's almost a one-to-one.
Okay. Everybody might be interested to make sure we understand the extent to which it's going to be youth from all over the county versus the city or at least all over the city school district and the two programs. So I'll be interested to hear more. I had a question. So I'm sorry, Kevin, if I in any way was too quick while I ran between meetings to weigh in on whether any of my requests got moved around in order. One of the reasons I wanted some of them earlier was the living wage. We had made a commitment a number of years ago to meet to do more each year on a living wage. So I wanted to ask Joe what's in here that addresses sort of the next step in that.
FoodNet is the only unique item in here. We've achieved the compliance that we said a couple of years ago. We haven't had any slippage. There are some that we identified a couple of years ago that may have inherent reasons why we can't achieve the living wage standard. But I know we've sustained what we accomplished a couple of years ago. The only outlier was FoodNet. This OTR would plug the gap at FoodNet. So I think we're generally where we want to be. Home care workers, we have issues, we have problems there. Places like the Racker Center have some inherent problems because of Medicaid billing only allows a certain wage level to be paid. So other than that, I think we have achieved very high levels of living wage compliance.
Okay, and I also looked through for agencies as well, so thank you. I assume that people will still have a chance to put additional requests in, even
Carol, I know I've said that at least two or three times over the last month, that you can put your request in any time. We have three meetings, and that's why we scheduled three. So if something comes up tomorrow and you think of a new request, please put it in as quickly as possible.
Thank you. I just want that to be clear to everybody who's here. Thanks. In public, too. Thanks.
Well, okay. Leslie, you want to say something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, I would be very interested in getting a report, because as Carol said it before I did, on what are the agencies that we've been able to, or contracts that we've been able to sort of make whole relative to the whole living wage piece. We had a list of places, and I understand the nuances of places like the Racker Center, et cetera. So if I can get that, that would be great. And who is left that we haven't been able to do anything with? We had set aside $100,000 and we've used most of all of it.
Right.
And then what next? So I'd be interested in that. Are the departments or agencies who are on for tomorrow already notified that they are on for tomorrow?
Kevin.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Down that, Glenn? Anna?
I had two questions. I'm going to pass right now.
Mike?
Quickie, but not about the budget. When you're ready, I just want to let folks know that our planned lunch meeting with Cortland, we've got to find a new location since Coltivari is not open for lunch.
Okay, we'll work out. I'll appoint a committee right after we're done here to figure that out. A small part of the budget committee can do that. Mike, is there anything you'd like to say? Or Dave?
Thanks for coming out, everybody.
Dan? Yes. Peter Stein?
No.
Dooley Kiefer?
No.
Oh, good. Thank you. No, I'm kidding. Thank you all very much. First of all, the public who showed up here and asked us about these things and told us what they would want. And I'm feeling really good about some of the requests that you're making and how that's going to all move forward when we get to the end of this process. And we have all 14 legislators here this evening. That's good. And I appreciate that. And I think the people you represent appreciate the fact that you've come to six meetings of budget presentations. You're going to go to three more, maybe a max of three more voting meetings, a couple of public hearings, and a final vote. So thank you all for doing it. You may go home.